Hi, this is Steve Allgaier with the United States Environmental Protection Agency Water Security Division. The previous speakers have described the attributes and properties of different contaminant categories, chemicals, pathogens, and radionuclides. In Part 6, we will discuss the process for gathering and managing contaminant information. Moving on to slide 99. The organizations considered to be authoritative sources of scientific data on some of these contaminant properties are shown in this slide. They include the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Environmental Protection Agency, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. There may be other organizations that provide reliable information, but these are those that we'll focus on in this presentation. Moving to slide 100. Eventually, we will have a database, EPA's Water Contaminant Information Tool, that will be a definitive source of information for contaminant properties as they relate to drinking water. They will contain information on health effects, properties, state and transport, as well as drinking water treatment efficacy. The current version of the Water Contaminant Information Tool has 9 contaminants as a prototype, but we are in the process of, at the time of broadcast of this webcast, we are in the process of populating this data system and finalizing the design such that it will be web accessible on a secure website. We hope to have that available sometime in the first half of 2005. Moving to slide 101, many databases that are available online will be a good first source of information until the Water Contaminant Information Tool is available. One of those is part of the ToxNet cluster of databases. That's the Hazardous Substance Data Bank. This cluster of databases is developed and managed by the National Institutes of Health. And the Hazardous Substance Data Bank in particular is useful because it does contain information on toxicity, health effects, state and transport, and commercial use and production. So it is a very reliable source, and in fact will be one of the data sources that will be used to populate the Water Contaminant Information Tool. One of the databases that is actually included in the ToxNet cluster is EPA's Integrated Risk Information System. This is a database that focuses primarily on human health effects and toxicity information, and provides very detailed information related to health effects and toxicity for those contaminants that are primarily toxic industrial chemicals or materials that are known to occur in the environment as pollutants. NIOSH has 2 products that I'd like to talk about. The first are the emergency response cards. These are geared towards first responders and contain information in a easily used format that would be particularly relevant to first responders, such as immediate hazards, toxicity, routes of exposure that one would need to be concerned about, and personal protective equipment. It's important to note about the NIOSH emergency response cards is that they do contain some contaminants beyond the traditional TICs and TIMs, or toxic industrial chemicals and toxic industrial materials, that have been a focus up until now. They contain information on some chemical weapons as well as some biotoxins. Furthermore, EPA has worked with NIOSH to ensure that contaminants that are of concern due to their potential to contaminate drinking water systems are included in the emergency response cards. The NIOSH Pocket Guide is similar to the response cards, but contains less information and also only deals with the TICs and TIMs. Moving to slide 102, another database, ChemFate, is part of a cluster developed by the Syracuse Research Center. It's part of the Environmental Fate database. But ChemFate is the component that will be of most interest to the audience of this presentation. ChemFate contains information on chemicals, basic properties, as well as some very basic bait and transport data. And the physical properties database is also managed by Syracuse Research Center, and again contains physical property data for about 25,000 compounds, so fairly extensive for the chemical properties. ATSDR has that database that's primarily geared towards Superfund type chemicals, and monitors the release of hazardous substances from Superfund sites or from emergency events. It does contain some detailed information about the toxicity and health effects of those chemicals as well. Moving to slide 103, the Food and Drug Administration has published a bad bug book, which is available online. Unlike the previous databases that I described, this one is the first that deals with pathogens and biotoxins explicitly. While the focus is on food for this particular database, it has to be acknowledged that many of the contaminants, especially the biological contaminants that would be of concern in food, are also a potential concern in drinking water. The bad bug book contains information about the basic properties and characteristics of pathogens and biotoxins, as well as information about the health effects, infectivity, and some case studies regarding outbreaks for those contaminants. And finally, there is on the Water ISAC, the Information Sharing and Analysis Center, there is a database called the United Kingdom Water Industry Research Contaminant Database, or UKWARE. Water ISAC is currently a fee-for-service and is currently only available to drinking water utilities and a small subset of government officials, primarily those within EPA. At this time, the EPA regional offices should have access to this tool and should have access to the UKWARE contaminant database, which again provides properties and transport information and toxicity information for a variety of compounds, both traditional picks and TIMs as well as some of the more exotic. Moving on to slide 104, there are many web-accessible resources that allow one to search primary scientific literature. Some of these are fee-for-service, others are free. Those shown on slide 104 are a fee-for-service and include things like the Ovid Biomedical Journal Database, First Search, the Science Citation Index, ProQuest, Biological Abstracts, STN Online, Dialogue, and American Chemical Society Journal Publications Online. Moving on to slide 105, we have some online resources that are available at no cost. These include the American Society for Microbiology Journal Publications. This website has a very good search engine that allows one to search both the journal and the conference proceedings for abstracts and full-text articles. And the National Institutes of Health also has an online library of medicine that allows you to search through a variety of media, journals, conference proceedings, books, other online resources for both abstracts and full-text articles. Moving on to slide 106, when available resources such as online databases or the primary literature fails, one can go to subject matter experts. There are several within the government, particularly within EPA. EPA's Water Security Division has expertise on threat analysis, response to incidents, national special security events, or NSSEs, and evaluation of contamination incidents and threats. And they can be reached at 202-564-3779. The EPA National Homeland Security Research Center has a red team that they've established, which is a group of subject matter experts that have knowledge in the area of contamination of buildings as well as drinking water. And they have, again, these SMEs are available 24/7 through the hotline at 513-569-7990. And CDC has an emergency response hotline as well, and their expertise is going to be primarily related to biological contaminants, although they do have some information and expertise on chemical and radiological contaminants as well. And they can, their 24/7 hotline is at 770-488-7100. Moving on to slide 107, there are other, continuing with subject matter experts, there are associations such as the American Water Works Association, which is an authoritative source of information on knowledge and engineering information geared towards the drinking water community. They also develop a number of standards, and as they continue work in the area of water security, may develop standards that are more targeted at response and drinking water threats and incidents. There is also the Water Information Sharing and Analysis Center, or Water ISAC, that I mentioned earlier. And this resource gathers, analyzes, and disseminates threat information specific to the drinking water sector. And they do have analysts that support the Water ISAC. And finally, there are subject matter experts at universities and colleges that you may be able to tap into. Moving on to slide 108, this shows a contaminant characterization and transport worksheet that was extracted from Module 5 of EPA's Response Protocol Toolbox. This is a comprehensive data worksheet that is intended to gather and collect information that may be of assistance in identifying and evaluating a contaminant and the propagation of that contaminant through a water system. It may be modified or expanded to manage additional information per the user's requirements. It's important to consider that this worksheet is designed to guide one through the point of first discovery of a potential contamination threat, all the way through the evaluation process and the point at which the contaminant is potentially identified. Moving to slide 109, continuing the discussion of the contaminant characterization worksheet, some of the basic information captured at the front end of the worksheet is geared towards the early stages of an incident or a threat where one may not be certain as to the identity of the contaminant. So the worksheet at this point is focused on gathering information that might be available that might help in the assessment of the identity of a contaminant. So it'll look at the information reported from the field. Is there any residual material? If so, what's the physical form and description of that material? Is there a taste and odor associated with the water or the material found at the site? Again, not a recommendation to taste or smell the material, but if it's obvious, then it should be reported. Environmental indicators of contamination, such as dead birds or dead vegetation. And finally, if there's any indication of the amount of contaminant introduced, such as an empty container. Furthermore, this worksheet contains sections to record consumer complaints or feedback that may provide indication to a potential contamination event. Information from witness accounts, from the site characterization, changes in water quality parameters, and finally, the results of any field tests conducted in response to the incident. Moving on to slide 110. This slide shows describes the section of the worksheet that focuses on the analytical results. Ideally, analytical results would give you the definitive sort of smoking gun information about the identity of the contaminant. And it's true, this is critical for verifying the identity of the contaminant using a standardized, accepted analytical methodology. But there are things to keep in mind as one evaluates the results of laboratory analysis, and that's what this section of the worksheet is geared at. The potential information to be considered are, in addition to the analytical result itself, are the method used and maybe any information about the reliability of that method, the sensitivity of the method, understanding whether or not it can go down to the level that's of health concern. In the previous part of this presentation, Al Lindquist talked about the sensitivity challenges associated with the detection of pathogens. Also, is there other data quality information that's critical to assessing the validity of the results, such as the precision, recovery? How did the QA/QC samples turn out? And any other information that might be important to consider as one interprets these analytical results. Moving to slide 111. This portion of the contaminant characterization worksheet is more geared towards capturing information about a contaminant once you have either a tentative or positive identification. So now you do have a target. You have a name of a contaminant that you want to collect information on. And that may be information on basic contaminant properties, as have been discussed previously, as well as the health effects, particularly the exposure routes, the toxicity, the time to the onset of symptoms, and any available preventative measures or treatment. And certainly any information available about the treatability of the contaminant by typical drinking water treatment practices. And that concludes part 6. Now we move on to part 7, which is the actual use and application of data for consequence analysis.